All right, so this EP was a long time coming. Can you just talk about the process and how you went from, you know, this guy performing on, you know, MTA subway stations and in cars to, you know, to this blossoming, you know, up and coming artist?
Absolutely, man. Well, foremost, first, the reason why you hear the sound that you hear from me, man, is I pretty much just mimicked all of the Motown greats and Sam Cooke, and I mean that's all my mom listened to as I was growing up. She had a collection of 45 records and stuff. So all of my music, all of the things, the first songs that I've ever heard was like "I Want You" and you know, "What's Going On," "Mercy, Mercy Me," Sam Cooke, you know, "Chain Gang." I mean, this is all that was pretty much played in my home. So it's pretty much just me just listening to this music over and over and over, man. And so to fast forward to now, I've known Kirsten Price for a little over 10 years or so, and she's always been this amazing producer and amazing vocalist. And when we met, someone brought me to her and was like, "Hey, I got this vocalist. He needs to record some stuff, blah, blah, blah." Actually, one of my best friends, Ralph, introduced me to Kirsten. Ralph again. And our relationship blossomed from there. It started blossoming from there. I was a little wet behind the ears. I just pretty much sung from my heart and my soul. I didn't know how to vocally warm up. I didn't know anything about chords, really, and progressions of notes and things of that nature. And working with Kirsten over the years, man, she's the reason why I know some of these things now and that I was able to develop my vocals. The Train Station and all that other jazz came from me working with Citizen Cope, being on tour with Citizen Cope, and one of his best friends, the Ghost. We pretty much call him the Ghost. That's pretty much what he goes by. He was the first influence for me to get into the Train Stations and start making a little bit of money. But besides that, promoting who I am as a vocalist and as an artist, and also getting to do what I love to do. I mean, like I would sit here and be depressed for months on end because I wouldn't have any shows coming up or anyone looking for me or any new music to give out. And the Train Station for artists, man, I mean, underground artists, if you're looking to put your stuff out, if you're looking to, you know, just make some extra money to, you know, help out with the bills or whatever, the underground, thank goodness for it, man. Thank goodness for it, because you get to get out here and display your art. So anyway, back to the 10-year process, man. She's been developing as an artist and as a producer, and so have I. And pretty much always wanted to do a project with me and put some music behind me. She just knew that it took some time to develop. She also had her career blossoming and doing the amazing things that Kirsten Price does.
Yeah, she has a new album that just came out a couple months ago.
Time went on, and years later she comes back and goes, "Hey, I think you're ready for this project now." So it's crazy. The story is really, really crazy. It gets a little deeper than that, but for the overall gist of it, man, you know, I owe so much to Kirsten Price in my development, and that's why the music just radiates honesty, because that's all it is. It's just me being who I am and her being who she is as a producer, as a writer, and just amazing artist. Just the collaboration is just timeless, man. So the biggest part, too, is that I wanted to put out inspirational music. Everybody's putting out crap and just stuff that sells. And, you know, for some artists, man, you know, just making the money isn't everything. You know, it really isn't. I want to be remembered, or at least have songs remembered and say, "Hey, this guy took time in a time when everybody was just pretty much trying to make, man, he chose to do his art like so many other artists, you know." And so I just wanted to stay honest with that. And I knew it would be a hard fight, because I've been in those meetings where people wanted to sign me on the dot. They just wanted me to sing about stuff that really didn't have nothing to do with what I was feeling on the inside, and I just couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's taking some time, man, but hey, man, there's no denying it now.
So your music, when you first started, I mean, you've collaborated with people like Common, you know, Mobb Deep, Wu-Tang Clan, The Roots. How has your style changed from then to now? Were you doing more commercial stuff then? And, I mean, what were you like?
Absolutely. It was, I was mostly a rapper. I was rapping a lot. So my timing with my music, because I sang as well, but I wouldn't let people hear it. I wasn't really into, like, vocalizing as much. I guess, I don't, I, to be honest, some of it probably was a little ashamed of being, you know, from church and having this church background and being in the choir and all that other jazz, because all my friends became like, you know, hood fellas, man. We did things that we ain't had no business doing, and, you know, singing and stuff like that. And in my time of growing up, man, like the mid and late 90s, people weren't really, you know, they wanted to hear rap and hardcore rap and just pretty much destruction, even though that wasn't, you know, what I felt in my heart. But these are the people I hung around. And some of the music that I was totally influenced by, Biggie, Tupac, I mean, all of those greats, Jay-Z, everybody, you know. So I kind of kicked the music, the singing to the side, and just kind of rapped a lot. And just I would sing every now and then, maybe my own chorus or something like that. But I was mainly a rapper, man. I would just, you know, rap about hardcore stuff, whatever, man. I was just...
you ever think of mixing those two? Like mixing the Motown with the rap?
Oh, absolutely. I thought as the process began, man, later on, I really thought that I would be the rapper that came out as a singer, like a rapper that can sing, a singer that can rap, or blah, blah, blah. And then Tyrese dunked up and had some single, and I was like, oh, man, you kidding me? Lauryn Hill to get up. And, like, I was inspired to do that because I was like, hey, it worked for Lauryn, so I know this can work. That time went on, man, I started vocalizing a lot more, and I got low when it comes to rapping. I mean, I could do that without a shadow of a doubt, but where my heart and everything lies now is just in my vocal ability and able to, like, understanding notes. It's like I had this talent before, but I never took the time to, like, really develop it. Mm-hmm. So now it's like, wow, I do this? And so now I'm more, like, in love with myself all over again and finding... patients are and what I can do. And so that's another thing, reason why it took so long with me and Kirsten, was because I wasn't humbling myself enough too, because she knew what I can do, but I was like, hey man, I'm into this hip-hop R&B shit. I know I can make this pop. I know what you're saying, man, but trust me on this. And I guess she was right in the long run.
So you're going to be starring in a movie soon too. I mean, how does that feel? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. The film is called The Bluest Note. It's it's a short film, and it's actually out in film festivals. They made it into the Urban World Film Festival. We didn't make it. We didn't win, rather, but we totally got a lot of acclaim. It made it into the Martha's Vineyard Film Festival, and it's going to the Atlanta Film Festival. I'm not sure what that film festival is called, but I'm sure it's like another Urban World Atlanta Film Festival. But we've got a lot of love from it, man. Tammy Ronan from the Basketball Wives, and a whole bunch of other people from Hot 97, Ed Martinez. A lot of people gave us a lot of love for the film and my role as act. I'm acting as an artist who had his heyday. I was famous at one point, but then I lost my voice, and from there just on a very, very fast decline. And it's pretty much about artists and or just people, period. When you had your heyday or you had something special about yourself, your talent, whatever it is, and then one day you lose it and you got to pretty much cope with not having it anymore. And that's what the story's about. So it's an amazing short. It's like, once again, it's called The Bluest Note. You can find us on www.thebluestnote.com. Directed by Marcus Green, and it's written by Oliver Webb. And we're raising some money now and trying to get some sponsors involved so we can shoot a full feature of it. But the 15-minute version of it so far is doing pretty well. So I got to act as pretty much who I am. I got to be a singer, and I got to be a depressed person in it, you know.
Yeah.
I do in my life, actually. So when you see this film, I'm pretty much just playing myself, which is a brilliant thing in itself. So I'm really happy.
So this album's coming out in November. Everything's kind of coming together for you. What are you looking forward to the most?
I'm watching my kids grow up. I have a little girl. She's 12. I have a son, Lucian, who's 2, and we may have another one on the way. So that's really the biggest part for me, to leave behind some really, really great work, visuals and audio, and I'm into martial arts heavy, so if I can eventually open up a dojo, a school, that would be you know, my life journey, man, and watching my children grow and taking care of my family. And, you know, that's getting old gracefully, if I can, within this crazy-ass world that we live in, you know? That's my ultimate goal now.